fat bias, too many uninsured children, safer needles worldwide, and we'll chat with Cancer Centers of America CEO Gerard Van Grinsven about a new patient survey they conducted nationwide about patient care and patient satisfaction. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show, the podcast for nurses by nurses. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of you for coming in and checking out the podcast this week. First up in this week's nursing news items, we'll take a look at what you can do to overcome weight bias against your obese patients. Then in this week's special interview tip segment, I chatted with Gerard Van Grinsven, a CEO of the Cancer Treatment Centers of America. They surveyed cancer patients nationwide to find out ways to make the patient feel more included in their care, thus improving outcomes. That and more is coming up later on in this episode. Before we get to the news and everything else, though, I want to make sure that you are following up on the information you get from this show, and of course every episode, by heading over to nursingshow.com. You can check out the links there for each episode's show notes, and of course there are other things there, articles and links to other things like the free Nursing Show mobile app, student nurse tips, and a whole lot more. So make sure you're following up so you know how what I talk about on the show each week can be applied or not to your own nursing scope of practice. If you want to get back in touch with me, I hope you'll do so. Please drop me an email. You can send those in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I love to hear from you, and I will respond back to every email that comes in, so please keep them coming. You can send me links to news items you want me to cover, or interview suggestions, or ideas for topics for future episodes. Whatever the case may be, keep those emails coming. That's it. I'll have some more contact information coming up later on in this episode, but let's go ahead and get on into this week's news items, and that's coming right up. Kicking off the news this week is a look at how we treat certain patients we care for. So, do you think you harbor a weight bias when treating overweight or obese patients? We all see them. The CDC says that nearly 70% of all U.S. adults are overweight and 35% are obese. Now, I found a great article on the subject written by advanced practice oncology nurse Lisa Schulmeister over at Oncology Nursing News site. She points out that we can engage in weight bias in a number of ways and may not even be aware of our reactions to these at-risk patients who need our compassionate understanding and top-quality nursing care, not judgment. Research has shown that many healthcare professionals view overweight patients negatively and express their opinions through both verbal and nonverbal means. Now, this might include making negative jokes and comments about overweight patients in the clinical setting or simply rolling your eyes when assigned certain patients. It's also been shown that many of us are cynical about the efficacy of weight management and diet control programs, believing that they are a waste of time. Now, this is not only counterproductive to the patient's wellness and their program to get better, but it's against our own doctrine and education as nurses. All patients must be given the optimal health improvement opportunities, whatever our personal concerns are. And this is especially true for insidious health risks like obesity. While we might feel like a broken record, constantly working to encourage overweight patients to lose weight and engage in healthier lifestyles, we must continue in our efforts. In fact, perhaps that broken record really is broken. Maybe it's time we stopped being lazy about managing these patients and use some good old-fashioned nursing practices to create new and inventive interventions just for these patients that will actually work. I think that's what we not only owe the patients, I think we owe it to ourselves. Next up in this week's nursing news is a story on the alarming numbers of uninsured children in the U.S., despite the passing of the healthcare reform laws recently. According to an article I found over at KaiserHealthNews.org, the numbers of uninsured children nationwide hasn't gone down under the Affordable Care Act. A study by the Urban Institute on Health Reform analyzed information from over 2,000 pediatric patients and compared the rate of uninsured patients to previous years before the Affordable Care Act. Now, even with the health insurance mandate, health insurance marketplaces, and even the availability of free and low-cost insurance for many children, the rates of uninsured was no different before and after the program went into effect. Now, this may not be all bad news. According to the experts cited in the Kaiser article, the uninsured rates for children before the Affordable Care Act went into effect were already pretty low. Other programs to ensure care for children have been around for several years, and many were already signed up under those programs, like expanded Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program. Still, there are those out there who have not been signed up for one reason or another. And it's projected that at least 80% of the remaining uninsured children out there are likely to be eligible for one of these programs, like expanded Medicaid or the CHIP projects. It's up to us in the healthcare system to help identify these children and hook them up with programs to assist them with finding the correct and affordable option that fits them the best. So I want you to keep your eyes open. Work with your facility social workers and local health department to connect these individuals to healthcare coverage they need. It not only helps them have better coverage, but it keeps costs lower for the entire healthcare system, too. Finally, in this week's healthcare and nursing news is an initiative from the World Health Organization, the WHO, trying to rid the world of syringe and needle reuse. Now, this has been dealt with in modern industrialized countries for a while, where we have the luxury of having a seemingly limitless supply of needles and syringes at our disposal. But in third world nations, this is not the case, and needle reuse is common practice in many places, spreading diseases and infections rapidly among communities there. In a recent TEDMED presentation, a British inventor by the name of Mark Koska came up with a solution to the problem, a syringe that can't be reused. Once you depress the syringe plunger to the bottom of the barrel, it locks in place and will not be able to be reused. If the plunger is drawn back, it'll just break off, rendering the needle useless. The challenge now is to get these needles and others like them out to the communities where the needle reuse is prevalent and use it along with education about cross-contamination to eliminate this problem. I urge you actually to go over and watch the short TEDMED video from this year's program earlier this month in Washington. It shows hidden video of a nurse reusing the same syringe on multiple patients, one of whom was known to have an HIV infection. According to the World Health Organization, there are over 1 million deaths worldwide from dirty needles, and they alone have caused 23 million hepatitis cases. We can do something about this. When we work with our facilities to donate supplies to third world areas or we visit these places on humanitarian missions, make sure we take these types of self-safing needles with us to leave behind. It's the responsible thing to do. A new national survey of cancer patients finds that many of them are dissatisfied with their care. The survey also reveals how gender, race, and other things can affect the patient's needs and perceptions of their care. So here to discuss the findings from this study, I got to interview Gerard Van Grinsven. He's the president and CEO of Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Now, their patient survey actually reveals a lot about some of the failures we have when treating and caring for cancer patients. I also asked Gerard about his company's relationship with the nurses in their system and the importance of nurses in the care of cancer patients. Check it out. Gerard, I want to welcome you to the nursing show. We have a lot of nurses, including a lot of oncology nurses that listen to this program, and I think they're going to be interested in what we have to talk about today. There was a key study that the Cancer Treatment Centers of America funded and backed to look at patient care in the cancer setting. And tell us a little bit about what some of the key findings were from this study.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jamie. It was very interesting because we surveyed 1,000 patients and 1,000 caregivers nationwide in different healthcare organizations around cancer. And what was unbelievable to find out that 25% of those patients are not satisfied with the care they're receiving. That's a quarter of your customer base, which basically is telling you we're not happy. And one of the key things they were talking about is you're not listening to my unexpressed wishes and needs. You're not communicating effectively to me. You're not giving me the appropriate information so that I can be a participant in the treatment of my cancer. You're using terminology which I cannot understand. A third of those surveyed said that the providers are sharing terminology I simply don't understand. And that creates a lack of confidence. And the study showed also that 20% of them are actually, because of that lack of confidence, changing providers, which means they are, you know, deferring their treatment, which in terms of cancer is not a good thing. So in addition, there is a focus on ethnicity and gender. And we found out that in there is also nuances of how people want to be treated differently. Women in particular are much more focused in how can the family support me getting through this difficult time. Men, on the contrary, want to get quickly back to living a healthy life and find a way to get back on the road. 79% of African Americans are very driven by faith and spirituality. 85% of the Hispanic community is focused on family and how they can become again a responsible family member and support a family. So all these things together, if we don't embrace them, will continue creating this unsatisfied customer called our patient. So I think this is a great wake-up call for all of us in healthcare, in addition to the great clinical care we provide, because that's ultimately the number one responsibility of us. But we need to learn that in addition, we're dealing with humans. We need to humanize healthcare. We need to understand what else do those patients value. And then we can create a patient experience second to none.
So really, you're talking about a couple of things here. First, that when we talk with our patients and educate our patients, that we need to include them as full members of their own healthcare team. And that doing that means we need to communicate with them in ways that they can easily understand so they can make that informed decision.
Absolutely. Because, you know, ultimately where I believe healthcare should go to is that we have a one-stop shopping, that the patient comes to us and we come to the patient, and not that the patient needs to go to different places. So how can we create this integrative care model that we come and sit around the patient and the patient feels I'm part of a team. The caregiver feels I'm part of a team in finding a way in how to treat this disease in the most effective way. And studies again have shown if you have that kind of focus and concept, the patient actually heals faster. The patient actually adheres better to the clinical instructions he or she will receive. So that is, you know, for me, the biggest aha out of this survey, because that will help us to do a better job in taking that patient experience to another level.
And, you know, the patient experience, as you said, is so important because it helps them heal faster. It helps their families and their support networks cope better with helping them through this difficult process. And I heard you also say that cultural competency is such an important part of this as well, that we need to be very culturally aware of gender differences and ethnicity differences because of how their unique perspective affects how they manage their own care.
Yeah, when I opened a new hospital in Michigan with Henry Ford Health System, for 6 months religiously, three nights a week, I went to Jewish homes, African-American homes, Asian homes, European homes to basically meet them at their home. And what I did, I brought food with me, because then you break bread and people will talk to you in a different fashion. And I went there just to learn what is important in your culture around the way you want to be treated, what kind of food would you like, how do you want to pray? And that information was very helpful for me to bring that back to my organization so that they really had a cultural awareness and could give individual care to those different type of cultures.
You know, this is something that speaks very much to my own nursing background because it's something that we focus on a lot, especially in educating our new nurses to be very much more culturally aware and providing that individual care approach. I'm curious, though, you know, why did Cancer Treatment Centers of America put this study into place to begin with?
Well, we did it for two reasons. Number one, we are a very patient-centric organization, and we constantly ask ourselves, what do the patients value most? Not what do we value most, but what do the patient value most? And this survey helped us again to bring this information back to our stakeholders and re-energize them again on this is what the patient is looking for, so let's make sure that we embrace that. Secondly, I hope with this survey that others in the healthcare world are going to look at this and say, well, maybe we ought to be changing the way we are going to deliver care to our patients so that ultimately, you know, many, many patient populations can benefit of this.
You know, I hear like you really have a great program there at your system. It seems like you have a team approach that includes the patient. Are nurses an important part of that team process as well?
Nurses are 50% of my stakeholder population, and nurses play a significant role. I just recruited the chief nursing executives for the system to make sure that her voice is representing the nursing population. So whenever I make decisions, that I make the right decisions based on the voice of the nurse. And by the way, my mother was a chief nurse, and she always taught me, whatever I do in healthcare, take care of the nurses.
Well, I know that we nurses appreciate that approach because we really believe that we have an important role as the bedside caregivers and the first line of meeting those patients' needs. And it sounds like you've got a good handle on this and that you're sharing that information with the rest of the healthcare system. I think that's so important because best practices need to be shared among systems.
Absolutely. In the end of the day, we're all here to improve the lives of our patients, regardless what our name is. And we need to, you know, share best practice, and we need to collaborate for the benefit of the patient.
Well, Gerard, I want to thank you for sharing some of your valuable time with our Nursing Show community here. And I'll make sure that we have some links back to this study. I think it's really amazing that we're able to find these things out so that we can help these patients with difficult problems heal faster and find the solutions to their care.
Well, thank you, Jamie. And if anybody needs more information, you can easily go to cancercenter.com.
That's going to close out this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank all of you for checking out the program this week. Make sure you follow up, though, on all of the information you picked up in this episode. Head over to nursingshow.com and check out the episode's show notes. There's a link right there at the top of the page. In there are listings for all of the episodes of The Nursing Show. From the most recent one at the top, you can scroll down and go all the way back to the very first episode. But I want you to get the full information there with links to other resources so that you understand how to apply what you hear on the show to your own nursing practice or studies. If you want to get back in touch with me, shoot me an email. You can send that in to nursingshow@gmail.com. I respond back to every email that comes in, and I want to hear from you. So send me your comments, your questions, suggestions, news links. Help support the Nursing Show community with your input. You can also get the Nursing Show email newsletter. There's a link and form right on the right-hand side of the Nursing Show site, so fill out that short form, and we'll send you the links to each episode's show notes directly to your email inbox each week. You can also connect with me on social media sites. I'm available there under the handle PodMedic, so you can find me there under twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic, so friend or follow me. You can also become a member of the community over on Facebook by liking the Nursing Show Facebook page at facebook.com/nursingshow. Click the like button there and join the conversation on that page. I post other nursing and healthcare articles and pictures on the Nursing Show site throughout the course of each week and over at the Nursing Show page, so check it all out. That's it for me. I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'll be back with more episodes here of The Nursing Show. Remember, it comes out every Friday for you, so you can wrap up your nursing week. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show.